Jefferson Historical Society meeting held on January 30th, 2011 at the Jefferson, New York Town Hall. The moderator is Charlie Buck. This tape is available through the courtesy of the Historical Society and Charlie Buck, and is free for your use and enjoyment for non-profit purposes. Please let us know your reaction to and your use of this audio recording.
3 or 4 days ago, Carol Bodner called and asked if I would carry out the duties of conducting I don't want to call it a meeting, it's more reminiscing and also education. All the people that have moved here since 1958 should treat this get-together as an education, because there's a lot of things that could happen today. I've been concerned about it for years, because people do not realize what went on. I looked up in Webster's dictionary, blizzard. The first definition is a long, severe snowstorm. I don't know if that means 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, or 4 days, which is something maybe we'll try to establish today, if this is really a blizzard or just a really, really, really bad winter, because it lasted a long time. The second definition, an intensely strong cold wind filled with fine snow. And that was true with 58. It stayed pretty darn cold, and it snowed every day. An overwhelming rush or deluge is the third definition. And certainly there was times when it was that, but it was snow. It was not water. So I'm going to call on a lot of people that I know went through this storm, and it wasn't just that they were responsible for themselves and their family, but many of them had from 30 to 50 or 60 or more animals to take care of and feed and water along with it. And because back in 58, this was still, I would call it, mainly agricultural area. I think we'd get started by calling on, I believe, the oldest member here who witnessed the storm and had those responsibilities of livestock and house and everything, and that's Martin Pirelli. Martin, could you tell us what you remember about the storm of 58?
I ain't remember any of it. It was pretty bad. Remember one time here, the paper flat? It was 10 days, it was closed.
Does everybody know where Tabor Flats is? You know where Mark Lowe's lives? It's that stretch of road up through there. As a matter of fact, I believe this picture is taken at maybe the lower end of it.
You know, up farther yet, I don't know. Just before you used to break the going on into Summit, up on that flat day, you know. One time they had 40 men one day there, shoveling back, you know. But today you go up there with a couple of good-sized payloaders, it would do more than 40 men. That's the difference of today.
Well, back then, I don't remember that there was a backhoe in town. They didn't make them. And they weren't in town. Especially four-wheel drive. Nobody even had, I don't even know if anybody had a four-wheel drive truck or anything in town. They just weren't made. Small bulldozers, they weren't available like they are today. So the amount of equipment was not around. It wasn't available.
Were you milking cows during that?
Yes. We had stock in two places too.
What did you do with the milk?
We used to take it out of the horses and dig it out of the road, you know. We never dumped a can of milk.
Even during that storm?
Huh?
Even during that storm?
Some of the milk trucks are very conscientious. They knew what time the plow went through and they would get in there. Or you would draw the milk out and meet the truck someplace. George Danforth, I remember him putting his milk in what's called a wagon box. It was a box on a wagon. And taking it all the way to Blenheim with the horses. What type of heat did you have in the house then, Martin?
Wood.
Yeah. So you had a supply of wood.
We had plenty of wood.
In the wood house, yeah. Probably enough for pretty much all winter.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. What was your farm power? Was it horses or tractors or
58? Let's see. Horses. We didn't have a tractor in 58. Hey, didn't we get one in 41?
We had two of them in 58.
Yeah, we had two of them. But wheel tractors.
I think.
Didn't need wheel tractors and that kind of snow.
58 was in the transition where farmers had horses and tractors. A few farms had already eliminated their horses. Some farms still had them. But a four-wheel drive tractor was not available then. They didn't make them.
With that kind of snow, you couldn't get out with a wheel tractor anyway.
Right.
That
right.
Kind of snow, you couldn't go out with any kind of wheel tractor.
No.
How did you get to your barn? Tunnel?
No snow blower then.
Albert, do you want to insert some comments in here?
Well, I remember upon eminence, there was a farmer up here, and they took in the grain with a helicopter, took out his roof for it on
there. Wow.
And I used to go out to the other barn and make the food.
There's something about Operation Haylift, they said.
Well, I know they flew hay into Tony Sivis, I think, and coal to heat the house.
You go back to 34, but that's the first year I came from Jefferson School, you know. And right in this lane here, right by Spring, coming from Jefferson this way, there was one lane left, and two wheels were on the shoulder of the road. There was just one track left there.
Yeah.
The thing was, in those days, the state and the county didn't pay, they plowed their roads. You remember they left it to the towns?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
Yeah.
And I remember, and the main roads had to be done first.
That's right.
For the snowstorm. I've been sore for 3 days. And after the 3 days, another storm came around, so you're sore for 6 days.
Albert, you got any more to add?
No.
How about food in the cupboard? Did your mother have a lot of canned goods down cellar so you didn't have to worry about getting to eat? Or
we used to make it to town. We used to make it to town and get all we needed.
Okay, let's jump over to Janet Bailey Foote and her husband Ed Foote.
You had to get out of
here. They're residents of the town of Summit, but Janet was brought up over the top of Mount Jefferson on the Howard Bailey farm. Howard was a supervisor here for a few years, and maybe she'd like to tell us what she remembers about 1958.
Yeah, well, we had a dairy farm, so we were in for 17 days. They couldn't get to us. and we milked the cows. We made 20 pounds of butter, sour cream cake, sour cream cookies. And then, you know, we just ended up dumping it after a while, just milking the cattle and dumping the milk because we had no room for it. But it took them 4 days to get up the hill, and finally they got an old Linn tractor. But they worked 4 days just to get up that hill. And then by that time, the snow was so hard that it just rolled back down in the road, you know, like boulders. And so we still couldn't get out.
A lot of people here probably don't know what a Linn tractor is. It was a truck that had tracks in the back and wheels on the front. Mm-hmm. And they had a lot of traction. They pushed a lot of snow.
We never topped until we never finished topping until the 8th of April, I guess. And we rented all the trees to Charlottesville and got a truck to haul the sap up to that. Because we go to the woods, we never topped any in the woods at all. I guess.
Right. I know two farmers. Jay-Z was one of them. The other one was Gunturk and I can't think of the other fellow's name. Down in North Harvest Field, they hired bulldozers to plow out the roads through their sap bushes because then it was all buckets. And like 2 or 3 days after they had them plowed out, we got a heck of a snowstorm and blow and filled them all back in again.
Frank Dyer did the same thing. He had his tracks plowed out and a storm came in and blew them all
forward.
Yep. Let me tell you one.
The length of this whole like blizzard or winter was unbelievable.
Let me tell you one. You remember when Ed Mann was supervising the highways?
Oh yes.
We were up on Mount Jefferson somewhere. He used to get so bad sometimes they used to go on the field and bypass it. But he got up there one night. It's 5 o'clock. It's quitting time, so he shut the Linn tractor off. You know. The next day they went saying they couldn't start it. So you know what they did? That time they got some McDonald's men come up there with a load of wood. And they shoveled out and lit a fire, or lit a fire under the Linn tractor until they got it warmed up to get it started.
Yep.
And,
Janet, you got any more comments? I think that was very interesting at 17 days that you were snowed in.
Not if you were the one that was snowed in.
Charlie, I was talking to Gerald Hamm this morning at church, and he flew the chopper. He was one of the members of the MCON who was on the chopper that week, and he made a lot of stops here in Jefferson. He was telling me about it.
Right.
It was very interesting. We didn't know about what's going on.
Yep.
So we were feeding our neighbor, and they had 10 children. So it's a good thing I was stocked up.
Okay.
Did they have the DEC offices in Stamford then?
Excuse me?
Did they have the DEC offices in Stamford then?
No. I don't know. No. They were around, didn't make any difference. Two of their plows buried over on 23 for I don't know how many days.
Yeah,
all you could see was the roof. There's pictures here someplace of them.
Charles, down there, but he sold for, you know, that was a tough spot.
Yeah, yeah.
I think one time they had 3 trucks buried in there.
Margie, hey, you were here in Jefferson in 58? Well, Margie, could you tell us about your experience and a little bit? I had a list written down here, the type of heat that you had in your house, the farm power, food in your cupboard. And so far, I know that I've called on all farmers. Because, as you know, most of us were farmers back then. But if you could answer those questions.
I'm going to switch over to the barn. It was bitter cold, and we have a big water bottles for each stanchion in the barn. Well, they froze, the pipes broke. But we had to make a way out to the creek and chop the ice out of the creek. The creek was totally froze over for the cows to get anything to drink. And then, of course, production suffered as a result of that. silage, corn silage in the silo, froze in about 14 inches from the edge. The silo motor wouldn't work unless you'd climb up and chop it loose, and then you'd bring the motor out on the silo motor because it was closed off. You would try to clean out where the snowplow pushed up along the edge of the road next to one of your fields to make a place to get in with your cow manure and stack it and stack it and stack it this spring. You couldn't get out in the fields, you couldn't spread it, and if you did, the spreader would freeze up. So it was terrible, but we lived through it. And it wasn't just 58, there's been some pretty severe winters since too.
Oh, yeah. Nothing to equal 58, but with a farm, any large snowstorm gives you problems.
How many cows have you been in 58?
Wow. Did you have pictures, Margie?
Phil Harris.
Yeah.
Phil lives right down the road here and had a dairy farm at the time. And
it's an interesting way. For some unknown reason, we got a burn clear in fall '57 and a PTO spreader. We were able to get up a hill, so the bob kept going downhill all the time. And there was a apple tree got right in the middle of that pile. The humorists are terrible. They're always humorous. Think apple tree's gonna die, Phil? Finally, they cleaned up the pile in the spring and the tree was dead. And you know what, Phil? That tree died, didn't it?
What kind of heat did you have then, Phil? Wood or coal?
Yeah. So their snowplows broke down one by one.
They only had two.
You remember. Charlie, you must remember Hank Beagle. Right? You could set your clock by him. He was be at our house at 8 o'clock every morning. But somewhere in there he got something flu or something. So his brother and Lee Madden had to take that Melrose that morning. So he got back to Charlottesville the next morning, time to start over. How miserable things were.
Jefferson Road Superintendent lived in the tool shed. At that time, the tool shed across the road here was not built. They had just an old wooden shed out here by where the drop boxes are, leading back this way. He lived in that tool shed 10 days, never got home. And it wasn't very warm either. I mean, it wasn't nothing like what we have today.
How did he eat? Did he have food?
I don't know. In the storm of 58, you worried about yourself and maybe your neighbors fairly close by.
This is Glacier Carrier, isn't it?
And, there was two hotels in town, and I imagine they got stuff to eat there and like that. But I had an article, and I wanted to read it. Here, I don't know where it went. It was about Gilboa.
That's okay. Helicopter crash.
I think so. I wanted to read it because when you start talking to a lot of residents and the road crew and like that, they say, "Oh, the equipment we got today, it's really not a problem." Well, I wanted to read this to you to show you what happens. According to Mr. Halleck, I assume that's Gene Halleck, which a lot of us knew. He's since passed away. Town of Gilboa purchased a new Walder plow last week at a cost of $27,000. those trucks today would cost you over 200. They were a positive drive. Every wheel had to turn. They were quite a truck. An old truck was traded in, and a bond issue over a five-year period will be assumed, he said. Bellinger, and he was the highway superintendent, Bellinger said Tuesday morning the transmission went out on the new machine, and two bulldozers are disabled. The town owns five Walders, and they were the foremost plow truck, and probably even are today, but most towns can't afford to buy them. Two light trucks and a grader. The county provided a blower and two bulldozers to aid in the fight. Now that's where the problem is. Everybody said, you know, the town highway equipment we got today is far superior to what we had then. But when you get something like 1958, this truck breaks down. That puts that much more load on the next two or three trucks. First thing you know, one of them breaks down. Then the storm gets bad enough so visibility is so bad you have to pull them off the road. So then the storm gains on you, and first thing you know, you've got a mess. And you have to be willing to admit that and prepare for it. Now today, the response time would be far superior to what we had then because of the equipment, the four-wheel drive backhoes and small bulldozers and like that are around that we didn't have then. They weren't available. So that part of it would be better. But people that have moved here since, and now oil being the main heat rather than wood and coal, you need to keep those oil tanks probably 25 to 50% full. Don't let them get down empty where in 2 days you need to get a delivery, because maybe you won't get it. They weren't, you know, in 58, I'm serious. It was a week for 10 days when it didn't make any difference much where you lived. You probably were not going to get an oil delivery. Luckily, most people back then did burn coal and wood, and all but a few of them, they had a coal bin in the cellar, and they had their whole winter's coal. Or they had a wood house, and their whole winter's wood was in the wood house. Because once you get 4 or 5 feet of snow and blowing, and like we had then, it was terrible.
Were there lots of power failures?
No.
No, that was okay.
The power, as I remember it, never went out.
Hit the ground.
Well, the wires couldn't come down. They were supported by the snow.
That's amazing.
Well, yes, Joe. Albert.
Yeah,
Joe
wasn't finished.
But every time there's a blizzard, it broke down and the ash got to the top.
That's right.
And I find the roads today are so much better than they were in those days.
They've taken down a lot of the banks. They created the drifting. But a snowplow is its own worst enemy. Because once it starts to lay up a bank of snow, that gives it a place to drift. And we just haven't had the right conditions in the last few years.
You notice these days they plow so fast, the snow flies right out.
Spreads it out a lot. Yeah. But we're getting, if we really got a storm right now, there's, like up here on Tabor Flats, there's getting to be pretty decent bank along there, and it can lay in 2 or 3 feet pretty fast if the conditions were right.
Yeah, but these days, the state takes care of it, so they'll come over and over a rotary. In those days, you couldn't get a rotary up here.
Oh, Margie.
I was going to say, what year was it they brought the rotary in? That was the only way you could get past Tabor.
Well, that picture that we had on earlier, and this is, the rotary's been used on that road. Mm-hmm. You can tell by the cut banks in 58, yeah, they used it. And it's been up since 58. They used it up on Churchill Hill here a few years ago.
Well, what I remember, I'm sorry.
Does the county still have one?
Yes, yep. I back, I was chairman of the highway committee when we bought a new Oshkosh. It's not new, but it had been refurbished by Oshkosh. So they give you an updated ticket, so it's just like it's brand new. Because the one we had before that was gonna say a 53 or 63. It was old.
Yeah. Well, I was about 9, so what I remember is mostly what my dad told me. You know, I mean, I didn't really know any of it firsthand. But what I remember he said, and correct me if this is wrong, was that the whole town was completely closed off for about 3 days. And our snowplows couldn't remove it. So what he said was they had to bring in a snowplow from Delhi to get through that 27-foot drift that we were looking at.
Well, maybe on Route 10, you mean?
Yeah,
they probably brought in a rotor.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay, that explains it. So that's,
from Delhi.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, as I recall, the rotary they brought in 58 was from the Army. And the Army supplied the rotary plow, and it started in Richmondville because there was Route 10 was closed from Richmondville to Stamford. And I was in Cobleskill, and I couldn't get home, as I recall, for 2 weeks. And they finally brought in the rotary, and they started in Richmondville, and the rotary was 10 or 12 feet wide, and it opened the southbound lane from Richmondville to Stamford. Then they turned it around, and it went back and blew the other lane to back to Richmondville.
But,
I mean, there was no, I mean, Route 10 was non-existent. It wasn't there.
And yes, Ed.
Bulldozers also that they sent at the same time.
Right. They brought in a...
One was and the other was a Cat, I think.
They brought in a Caterpillar D7, call it National Guard or Army bulldozer, and they brought it as far as Blenheim. And Floyd Hall, that was Hans Hall's father, Jasper Hall's father, and his half-brother Earl, went to Blenheim. They drove it in to Jefferson from Blenheim because they didn't dare come up the hill with the truck. Drove it in. We had the one night that we had a particularly bad storm, it laid drift at the end of our barn. I would say it was somewhere around 15 feet deep. We had nothing to fight it with, and forget using a shovel, it would blow it in faster if you could shovel it out. So we had to run the manure off the cleaner for 2 weeks, just let it go right off the cleaner. When they came up with that D7, they opened Porter Road. That's the one that goes up to Little Lake Campground and on up to Carl Fates. Because we had chickens up there. And the only way to get in there was walk. And then we bring the eggs out on a toboggan. They feed in and bring the eggs out. Well, by the time we got back to farm, about 50-60% of the eggs were froze and cracked. But there was no use of leaving them up there because there was no warm place to leave them. So the same thing would have happened. And so that's what we were doing while they opened that road up so we could get up there. And then they went around the corner of our barn, pushed the manure pile out of the way, and then they went on up the road. I don't know where they went next with it, but they got it fast up in Horton Road. I don't know how many people are familiar with a bulldozer, and a D7 is a big bulldozer. They weigh, I don't know what they weighed then, now they weigh about 25 tons. But the snow will pack in the tracks. And when that gets about so hard and froze, it'll shut the bulldozer down. So tracks that are made to run in the snow have a hole in the pad so that when the cog goes around, it pushes it out through the hole. But anyway, it got set up on Horton Road, and they had to get permission now. You know, I mean, it's not their machine, right? So they got to get permission from the Army or National Guard or whoever to burn holes in the tracks so that they can move it. And so they did that. But we finally did get things opened up, but I'll tell you, it was a real battle.
The milk truck from North Hardinfield had to go out to Oneana, because to get to the Coopersville Co-op Creamery, they had to take the melt from North Harvest Field out to Oneana and then back Route 7 to Coopersville. And that's the only way they could get the melt from here to Coopersville. And Howard Schrump told me last night that he, Steve Cassay, Bobby Nelson, anyway, there were six of them, and they started shoveling at North Harpers Field Road, and they shoveled, hand shoveled, Campo Road clear up to the Nelson farm, because Nelson was the milkman carrying the milk. And he said that it took them six or seven of them shoveling. He said they were able to shovel that in one day, which to me is amazing.
Wow.
He said that night they reached the farm.
Some places, it probably blew it off clean,
yeah,
so they only had to shovel where the drifts were.
And the thing is, you mentioned that, you mentioned the bulldozer, but I remember the snow was so deep that the bulldozers had to zigzag. In other words, they would push it off to the right, then they'd back up and push it off to the left. They couldn't just keep going. They had to zigzag their way down every road. I mean, it was just incredible.
Yep.
They talk about freezing.
Yes, Dan.
You know, all of us now are cognizant of emergency services. What happened? I mean, were there emergencies, fires, or did people lose their lives?
Didn't have any fires that I remember. Do you remember, Martin?
Speaking of emergencies, my brother Ernie was working for Hewlett's store, and Doc Duell, you know, the doctor here in town, called Hewlett's store, and some baby was sick on a back road, and they needed this medicine. And so Ernie was dispatched by Harold Hewlett, and Ernie said that he got the medicine, and he rounded up the Boy Scouts here in Jefferson, and he and the Boy Scouts snowshoed back into the to where the sick baby was.
Yep.
With the medicine. Yeah.
And what were the kids doing all this time? There was no school.
Yeah. Well, they were making snow caves and all being kids. They didn't have to go to school. They couldn't get to school.
School was open most of the time.
One stretch there a week, it was closed straight.
But otherwise, most of the winter, we had school.
Well, that's different. When you were young, you walked through snow that deep to get to school. Now, if they got a white frost, they call it off.
The funny thing was, though, in 58, you didn't walk through the snow, you walked on the snow. Because it was so dense and so heavy and so packed that you simply went up the bank like 10 or 15 feet, and once you got up there, you could just walk across the snow.
Well, that tells you how cold it is, too, because during the storm, because when it's really cold and snow drifts, it will be hard. You can walk right over top of it.
Yeah. But everybody had snowshoes, too, so that when, you know, you weren't totally bound to home. You know, you could get out if you needed to.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can't remember, because we didn't, you know, just for the fun of it, get out and walk in it. But when snow's soft, snowmobiles are no good to you. They just get stuck. So unless you get a real heavy snow or the snow gets settled, I mean, we think, you know, that they would help out. Well, they would after the snow got settled, but in a fresh snow, they aren't much good.
Talk about the helicopters. I remember they were using the school parking lot up there in Coopersville on the hill. They were using that parking lot as a helicopter pad, and the hay was being brought up, and the helicopters were taking the hay bales and dropping them to the different area farms all around.
Somebody must have another story here to tell about it.
Got another
story. Bonnie.
Well, I'm pretty sure that was the winter that we lost our barn. We were second house from the corner on Summit Street right in Jefferson, you know. And we had a barn behind the house. But it was old and it was getting a little bit rickety. And my dad said there were three blizzards in a row, as I remember, each weekend. and it just kept piling up more and more and more. And finally he said, you know, don't go near the barn because it's gonna go. And sometime in the middle of the night I heard this creaking noise, so I went flying to the window to watch it. And sure enough, I got to watch this wow. thing just collapse and, like, you know, come back up again. No more barn.
Phil?
Yeah, that would have quite a few barns.
Oh,
only half of that sweater.
Oh.
How did you get as a fifth of February?
Right, at least three stall barns.
Boyd and Earl come off the road there. They couldn't make the turn and go uptown. So they turned around in our driveway. Well, next morning they weren't back. They decided to go to Hunter's land to get their two bulldozers. They were out in the woods doing a logging job. Well, they finally got back 7 o'clock that night. Well, they'd run into a couple trying to get to Cobusco Hospital. She was having a baby. So they threw in a log truck and
Boyd logged it all his life. He was well-schooled in how to handle snow and storms.
Oh, they got there and got back. But I don't know how many days. They still have that wooden bridge there then, where they put the tubes in.
On Fuller?
Yeah.
Gee, I don't know. I can't remember, Phil.
The Boyd was plowing driveways. So they come out of there, one truck hooked to another, the bulldozer in front, and usually a station wagon behind. All put together. All the other things would stop, and they'd pull and go. That was hilarious.
Well, anybody else? Adolf, you lived here at that time?
Oh, yeah. Our milk driver would go to Blenheim and then Middleburg and then to Colesville with the milk because he couldn't get through Route 10. You know, one day it took so long to make a trip around. Did you believe it? We got cans back and it's going through the washer and there were short pieces of frozen ice in the bottom yet.
Yeah, it was pretty cold.
You got them back.
You know, and
lucky you got them back.
This. Well, I guess there's a question, and I don't know if we can tell by any of these news clippings or not, but as I remember, it never really started until February.
Yeah.
Yes, the 10th of January.
Was it?
No. No,
yes,
yes. No.
We didn't have much snow then. When?
No.
So February.
In January, I just heard here about a week ago, and I should have marked down the dates, but it was around 15th, 18th of January. They announced it on television. It was 18 below one night and 20 below the next night. That was in January of 58. But I don't remember much snow in January. It didn't hit until fourth part of early February.
You want to talk cold weather. In 1934, in Stanford, somebody kept track. And they said 20 out of the 28 days in February, the thermometer never reached zero.
Yep.
But since 15, 20 below.
Was that February or March?
Huh?
Was that February or March?
February. 20 out of 28 days, the thermometer never reached zero. And then you remember we found that 400 bushel of potatoes in the cellar. They're afraid they're going to freeze. Listen. He was offered 15 cents a bushel, that's $60 for 400 bushel of potatoes, and he didn't take it, and that was the last offer he ever had. We found it and I feed him to the cows. $60, now you're paying for $60 for a bag of potatoes.
Okay, we must have more stories about 58. If not, maybe we got some questions.
Any more pictures?
This is Jerry, and he's been recording these pictures and putting them onto the computer, and that will go into the archives for Cambridge Historical Society.
And as you see of the few pictures anyway, we really had some snow.
Is there any way you could burn CDs of these?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to get a copy of that.
Yeah.
But the problem are most of them are copies of copies, photostats, and
well,
it's really
right. It's better than I have.
Pictures.
I don't have much of nothing.
Yes, your name, please.
Bonnie. How long would it take for it to melt? Until July?
You know, it was surprising that spring. Remember, it went away so quickly, we never knew we had snow. Well, sometimes we could have a flash flood.
It went off easy.
It did.
I don't know. I do know that our neighbor, John Faith, came up with a piece of furniture Easter Sunday weekend. That was one of the roads that the bulldozer plowed out, and he could get up to his place, but the snow was so deep that he couldn't unload it, and he had to unload it at our house. And that was Easter Sunday weekend. I'm sure we probably had snow in certain places, you know, small spots like that that year into Maine.
With the heavy flooding?
Yes, Janet.
Yeah, the top of Churchill Hill, they that big drift, they had it in there until the end of June.
End of June.
Yeah.
I don't know how many here know where it is, but right on top of Churchill Hill. That in 58, they plowed right out through the meadow there.
Yeah,
they didn't stay on the road.
Field.
The snow plow actually went right out through the meadow. And if you get the right gear, you get just a tremendous drift there. the person that built that house up on the hill there, his driveway comes out right where that drift is.
You know,
of course, he didn't know it when he built the house. But anyway, that is just a tremendous drift, and I'm not sure that's the only time that they've plowed out through the meadow there.
They went through the cauliflower fields
with
the school bus.
Yep.
I remember those cauliflower fields. They were really productive up there.
Yep. Anybody else got any stories about it? Questions from any of the newcomers?
What did Allen Road look like? That's where I live now.
I'm not sure we uncovered that. Yeah. The spring.
we have Tom Fisher's old place up there.
Right.
My friend was in Allen. I got pictures here of the last storm, and it doesn't have to do with this, but back in February 26th, and I had 4.5-5 feet of snow there this past year.
Mm-hmm.
It drifted up to like 8 feet. Mm-hmm. So I could just imagine how.
Well, last year, don't you remember? It was last year, but the biggest single snowstorm we ever had around here was between 4 and 5 feet.
Yeah,
who's ever heard of that kind of storm around here before?
But anyway, as I remembered, it started early in February,
yeah,
and it never really stopped. I mean, we did it 2 or 3 days, but until 15th, 20th of March. And even then, we got a break where the sun come out, and it was quite nice for 2 or 3 days, and we got 18 inches in one night of heavy snow. That was heavy snow.
Yeah. Well, was it a low that came through, or was it lake effect, or...?
No.
Just
stuff
no.
That sat
just
there?
No.
They were low pressure.
Yeah.
We get very little effects here.
Well, some of it depended on where you were, because the wind could carry a lot of it away. And then if you were where it dumped it in, you had a lot of snow. But anyway, back then, we didn't have the problems that we would have today, because people either had a woodshed full of wood or a cellar full of coal. There was only a few people that lived day to day with coal or wood. They had a cellar full of food, usually, and so they were pretty self-sufficient. They might have to dump the milk, but if the milkman paid attention and got right in behind the plow, picked your milk up. I know ours went all but one day, and that was planned, that he had another farm that he hadn't been to in a couple, 3 days, and he wanted to get there, so he left ours. But, and that was true, like Martin said, that his went every day. Send down your milkman a little bit. If you had a real conscientious milkman that really tried.
Of course, we had to meet him down the road, though. You know, he didn't go all up to the milk house.
Right. But, I mean, some of them, you know, well, that's your problem. But a guy that was ours was Lauren Kerr, and he was conscientious, and so we made it. But he would, follow the plow in and then get right back out. Because from our house to town is about 2.5 miles, and if the plow was headed for Jefferson and you needed to go to the store, you went up to the store and you got back within the hour, because any much more than an hour, the road was plugged. That's how fast it was blowing in.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it two storms that were back to back?
Well, it lasted for 4 to 6 weeks total.
The major dump, as I recall, was like one storm hit, and then 7 days later, the second storm hit. In other words, it was two back-to-back, and before they got the first one cleared, the second one dumped. And then it was it.
Three weekends in a row, that's what it was.
Three?
I remember
two.
Yeah.
Yes, Dan.
Martin had mentioned you still had cans at that time?
Oh, yes.
Did everybody have cans, or did everybody have a bulk tank at the moment?
Bulk tank
was
unheard of.
Right.
They interviewed Claus and Wee on WGY and about the people getting food, and he said, well, he wasn't worried about the people living in the back roads. He's worried about the guy that was 50 feet off Route 20. Exactly, word for word, what he said.
Even when we had a bulk tank, we never dumped milk. I mean, one time we had 3,000 pounds stored around the place.
Yep. Where Bonnie lives, that's the bad stretch of road from Route 10 out to your house.
Yeah, now, where they have. Yeah.
I've seen some tremendous drifts out through there. That's why it's so wide.
No shoes. It didn't used to be wide. Yeah.
Yes.
I guess it was about 3 or 4 years ago. I live in Tabor Woods, and it was my moving day from New Jersey. Valentine's Day, if you remember. And I called the moving people and said, you know, we get winters different up here than you do. Oh, no, we'll be there. Well, they were stuck in Jefferson in a ditch. So, of course, shut the motor off, or you're going to have no gas. And the huge snow plow pulled them out once. Then they did get to my house. That was the scariest feeling for me. I went out to the mailbox down the driveway just to see if I saw them and flag them down. And by the time I could come back, it was so deep I couldn't walk. That was scary. And that one day we had 4 foot where I live. And I thought the movers were going to stay overnight with me. They couldn't get a hold of their boss, so I guess they figured they better go. So on the way out my driveway, they got stuck in another 5 foot ditch. And the snowplow came again and got them out. But
I don't remember, but 1929.
Yes, it was. 29 was a bad one.
I don't remember that. But, over the years, and I'm sure if we keep thinking, I've seen little incidents that really didn't last all that long, but we're a little bit serious. You know where Peck and Potter Farm is?
Yes, I do.
Carol Bodner does, because she owns it. It's right on the corner of Peck Street and Creamery Street, where that house burned. On the lawn, right on the corner, was a huge maple tree.
But you know, as times get more difficult, they become more. As times become more modern, they become more difficult too.
That's right. That tree was like that.
What?
We had a storm. And I can't tell you what year it was. 60s, maybe early 70s. But we had 30 below, and the wind was blowing like you wouldn't believe. It was over New Year's. I don't know if it was New Year's Eve, but it was a couple days one way or the other. And anyway, that wind blew that tree over and took the wires down. Froze up several houses in town, busted all the pipes. In short order, they had the power back on by, I think it was 11, 12 o'clock that day. But it was so cold and so windy. That, I mean, the temperature in a lot of those old houses just plummeted.
Well, on the Valentine's Day storm, I was getting worried because the plow goes through from the county, and you know I'm getting buried with the drift cutting in front of the house. And I remember I was alone, and I remember Gary Lawrence coming down with the tractor and what looked like something he had concocted—a snowblower out of like a giant can. The biggest thing I've ever seen. It wasn't a regular snowblower. He'd made it, I'm sure. And I was so happy, and I had pictures of him. I'm sure the person Gary saved the day. And that just blew the snow away, and I was like, saved.
Charlie, what was the temperature the night that your parents' house burned?
Yes, my parents, that was 1959.
Cold.
In January, it was that morning, we were eating breakfast at 8 o'clock. We saw smoke come out around the chimney. It was 14 below zero, and the wind was blowing like you can't believe. Jefferson Fire Company, and I never held it against them, and neither did any of my family, because it was terrible. But when they got there, the pumper was froze up. They couldn't pump a drop of water. Stanford came, but of course, by the time Stanford got there, with that wind, I mean, in a matter of 2 hours or so, the house, I think, was completely gone. And you couldn't blame anybody. It was, you know, at 14 below zero, what can you do? What can you do? Everybody's human, you know.
Tapped a hole in your pond. There's so much ice on it. There wasn't any water in there.
Right.
Hit the bottom, hit the mud.
But when Stanford got ready to shut the pumper down, they had a man by every joint. Because as soon as they shut that pump off, they had to take it apart. They didn't freeze it, and you couldn't get it apart.
Well, that was the whole thing with, you know, you say peck and potter with the maple tree. The house that, you know, burned down, we've taken over that property, and that was again around right after New Year's, and it was there was an electrical short with some Christmas lights, and when here they are, what, like 100 feet from the firehouse, and they bring the stuff up, and every last one of the hydrants were completely frozen. I mean, again, it's, you know, that one of those minus 15 degree things with the wind chill, and they just had to let the thing burn down, you know, just, you know, really well.
We've been in a fire department 47 years. Those are the last 7 years we haven't had to, but we've seen a lot of those fires in that kind of weather.
I don't know when they had the fire down here now.
Turkey,
Harperfield.
Mm-hmm.
I got home that night at 14 below zero. The howling wind and sports on. I asked myself, what's a damn fool like you doing out on the road? Of course. That's where you feel about it.
And in one part of there, one, two, if you shut your hose off, just turn it back on, you had to put the nozzle on the fire to throw it out. Now we got 3 o'clock, so we gotta get going.
But anyway, it you're at between 1,800 and 2,000 feet when you're in Jefferson, in just about any area. And it doesn't take long for the weather to change, and it doesn't take long for the weather to get bad.
Next week, you're talking about cold weather. In 1948, it was 10 years before this, in 1948, we were living down in South Courtright on Betty's Brook. And it was March because the sap was already up in the maple trees and people were sapping, and it went so cold that
the trees split open on their trunks, and every time the trees would split, it would sound like a gunshot. It was just like somebody fired a gun off. And I can remember that.
Thank you, Albert. Thank you, Martin.
Thanks, thanks.
I had to leave, but we got another appointment. But I do remember the snow. It's just like a scanner. Thank you. Bad news.
Thanks for the info.
Different storm, but the feeling probably, it was 1993. My son had just been accepted to college, and I figured I'm going to be really poor in the next 4 years. So there was a chance for me to buy a canoe. And I drove in, and I picked up this canoe, and I got home, and I was like, didn't really know where to put it because there was a snowstorm coming, and I didn't want to look out. So I put it in the living room. And so I had this canoe sitting in the living room, and the next morning woke up, and this is what, you know, I'm sure the same thing happened in 58. You know, I woke up at our old house, which is on Potter Hill Road, and the snow, it was one of those two and a half foot snowstorms, and the drift, I came downstairs and I looked, and all the windows, everything was like kind of gray. they were totally covered. And so, you know, we were kind of inside, and I was able to get a fishing show on the TV, and I was sitting in my canoe watching the fishing show.
In the canoe.
Right. Coming down and seeing that, you know, you couldn't see out the windows because the snow was up to the roof, you know.
We've had a lot of major snowstorms, you know, since 1958, but they only last a day or two, and you had plenty of time to dig out, and then things returned to normal. But with 58, it lasted so long. I mean, it was like 4 to 6 weeks that you were battling snow.
You know, it didn't happen to us, but I remember other kids at school saying that they had, you know, real trouble digging out the doors because they couldn't, you know, the snow would pile up and drift up against the door.
My friend didn't have a shovel in her house,
yeah,
and the door opened out, and she could open only, and she all she had was her dustpan, and she was like, and putting the, taking the, she was putting it into a garbage can,
so
she could get the
door open. By the way, that, you know, the plow that we use today, years ago, they called them a dustpan. That's what they called it. They weren't a snow plow, they were a dustpan.
That same fall of 57, they had the Asian flu epidemic, and they closed the schools for the Asian flu. So it was my senior year, so I had more time off.
I had just asked how long the schools actually closed was the question.
Yeah.
Well, from the snow there, one stretch was a week straight.
Yeah,
every
well,
day.
It was 2 weeks, I thought. But then it was closed 2 weeks in September or October for the Asian flu. Remember, that was the same year they had the Asian flu epidemic. And they had so many kids sick with the flu, they just shut the schools off. I ended up with 2 weeks, and I never got the flu, so I had 2 weeks off for the flu, and then I had a couple of weeks off for the blizzard, and, you know. It was a great year. I spent the time with my girlfriend.
You're not supposed to know about that.
Well, she was a mile limit, and they never plowed her road.
Gentlemen,
what was the machine they use on the ski area right now?
Yeah.
Broom.
Yeah.
They have these
yeah.
wide tracks.
I don't know if he's here.
Very
he's
wide
here.
Tracks, yeah.
But they just pack it down
yeah.
and go on top
yeah.
of it.
The gentleman that helped dig the train out.
Jim Churchill was going to come. But he has a broken arm and has some other issues too. But I thought he would be here. He had a recollection of digging the trains out in Stamford.
Yeah, that's another thing. The trains.
Because that's the picture that's.
The train was still running in Stamford.
When I was in college, it was just at the end of steam on the Rutland Railroad. And they have a picture in the railroad station, which is no longer a railroad station, commemorating the railroad and all this. And there's a picture of this
steam engine with a snowblower on the front and a Volkswagen sitting on top. Chopped it up and stopped it up.
They had two snow plows buried out on 23. I think we mentioned that. They were state plows, one right behind the other. You could see just the top of the roof. It was a pretty serious, bad storm, but people were used to taking care of themselves pretty well. Is there anybody here that worked away from their home during the blizzard or winter of 88 or 58? I get 88 confused because my grandmother was born during the blizzard of 88. Not too many. Most people were employed right on the farm around here at that time. Well, I was hoping somebody would be here that did commute to work.
Beach father worked at Centilla and drove from Dallas to Sydney.
Of course, that was the best way to go.
Yeah.
You know, most of the time you could get to Oneonta. And
I know my mom did. She went down to the Hotel Augustine in Cobleskill, where she was a waitress, but I can't remember now. I mean, she couldn't have gotten there, but I don't remember then.
Did she get home?
You got more comments? How did you get out? Do you have a team of horses then, or?
No, just a tractor.
Just a tractor. No. That was a real problem, disposing of the manure.
Yeah.
Getting it out of the barn, because you couldn't move. Yes, Dan?
I got curious about your comments now. Is it better, it was easier to go down to Oneonta. Was it very specific in this area? I forget, I think it was Martin that said that you could get the Blenheim going that way. So did it get better as it went to Blenheim and to Gabola? Was it,
it got some better, but like going down the north road toward Blenheim, once you get to the Broman place, what used to be the Broman place, it's probably a half a mile out, three-quarters of a mile below where I live, the road doesn't drift much from there down. And they kept it plowed. They kept North Road open. A lot of places, it was just one lane, but it was open.
Did you get all the way down to 30 on that?
Yeah. Yep.
And then when you got down to 30, that wasn't as bad either?
Not quite, no.
No, just quite easier than through all the valleys.
They may have had as much snow, but they don't get as much drifting.
Also, the altitude, I mean, Jefferson's pretty the highest town around, really, except for maybe Summit.
Summit's a little higher.
But, I mean, if it was an altitude-specific storm, you know, they'd be dumping most of the
right
stuff up here.
Yeah.
Well, the wind was so bad.
But it was the duration of it and the severe wind and the snow. We had a Russian immigrant that lived where the campground is now, right behind the farmhouse. He kept track of it, and there was snow flurries in the air 40 days in a row. At least snow flurries. Some days it might have been snowing hard, but there was snow in the air 40 days straight.
I was down at Catnap Books here a few months ago, and I noticed they've got a book, kind of a new book on the history of Carlisle. And just for grins, I was flipping through it, and one of the chapters is on the blizzard of 58, and all about the Carlisle. Of course, my brother had a farm up in Carlisle
right
at that time, David. And I was reading all about, because it hit up there, too. I mean, especially the drifting. The wind, like you say, the wind was so bad. That, I mean, even
well, Carlisle and Sharon are really bad for the wind anyway.
Yeah.
But I think there's some good pictures in that book of the snowbanks and like that in 58.
Yeah.
Because I've looked at the book.
Okay. So you look at the elevation of two towns. Sharon Springs has a lot of elevation in two towns. It's very similar to here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, the highest and the lowest elevation, the way I understand it, it's in the town of Esperance, in the county. highest elevation in the county and the lowest.
Well, on a map of New York State, it has Mount Jefferson at 2,700 feet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Mount Jefferson.
You've been talking a lot about drift. Blenheim Hill Road evidently is a real buster to plow. Right above Ekman's farm. They just have
above Wilson's there?
Above Wilson's,
yeah. That's right. That end is a lot worse. The other end, the north end, North Road end, is pretty much woods all along it. If you got woods, usually you don't end up with very much drifting. You just got the snow that falls. But the other end is open meadow and like that, and it drifts pretty bad going up that hill.
Okay, and it's what, it hits the hill and comes down the hill? So
possible, I don't know.
No.
I never stood over there to find out. Janet, I think you had a comment, maybe?
No.
Oh.
We need a coffee and refreshments in the kitchen.
Any more questions? So any newcomers, keep the oil tank at least quarter to half full, keep some extra soups and what have you in the cupboard. And
I just want to make one comment about, because my family's been coming up here since 63. Mm-hmm. They had a summer place over on the Bear Gulch Lake. And it was either I was about 12 or 13 years old, and it was either 64 or maybe 65. They came up for either a Christmas weekend or right into the beginning of January. And they couldn't go up at the top of the hill where our camp was, because there was too much snow there already, so they parked at the bottom of the hill. They all had a 63 Chevy Bel Air. So it snowed like hell that night. We got up the next day, and we looked out the window, and all we could see was the antenna. And that was it. And we were there for about 5 or 6 days. They couldn't plow the roads. And that was the coldest temperature I was ever, too. It went down to 36 below zero. And the only reason why I know it went that low is because the thermometer, it was a mercury thermometer we had up by the house, and it broke at 36 below. So I don't know what it actually was. It could have went lowest, but we called it 36 below. So, and that was either 63 or 64.
That might have been when it blew that maple tree, because I know it was 30 below.
So it was called 36, we called it, because it broke. So we couldn't do nothing about it. Sure. Coldest I've ever been in. Might have went to 40 below, but I don't know.
That spring when we started to make maple syrup, right below my house where I live, between there and the Bergstrom place, I handed sap over the telephone wires where the snow plow had plowed it up. I said to Jay-Z, you know, I don't know if you noticed it in those pictures, but with the snowplow, they kind of make two levels out of it. And I asked him to come up on that first level. I said, I'm going to hand the sap over the telephone wire just so I can say I did it. And I didn't have to go like this.
Yeah,
I just
right there.
Yep. I helped him that year, and I'll tell you, that put a test to your strength, because every step was right into your belt. But once you get a track and it starts to thaw, it'll thaw that out quicker. And but it was some battle.
Well, we had a more sturdy thermometer than you had. It got so cold, that thermometer pulled the corner of the house right down.
That's a good story.
I think the biggest thing with 58 was the wind. The wind and the snow combination. The wind just never stopped. A lot of times you couldn't see across the road.
I do remember that wind howling, like around the corners of the house, and, you know, putting rags in the double, you know, hung windows so that they wouldn't get, you know, iced on the inside.
When it gets so bad that visibility is zero, then they have to stop the plows. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody's stranded in the road, and you hit them with a plow, kills them.
That picture reminds me of last year when there was that 4 feet of snow on my neighbor's house, on Dean Gray Nathan's house, and they were away, and I sent my son down to shovel it off.
Oh.
And he took a little sled and he slid towards the porch, and he just packed a little snow under the sled and jumped up onto the porch roof. Mm-hmm. And then when he finished shoveling it, he just slipped back.
By the way, that little article I read on Gilboa, that brand new snow plow, they're old in the road and put a big bulldozer behind it and bent the frame, had to get rid of it. That year, same year, it was brand new. Then the county, probably Phil remembers that story. The county bought two huge Walters, biggest one they made. Didn't have the 1, 2, or 3 days, knocked all the rods out of it. Come to find out it was built for an airport machine, had a, what they called a flat pan in it, so that every time it started uphill or downhill, it'd lose the oil pressure. Knocked the motor out of it right away quick. Yep. But a lot of, I mean, we had a brand new Walters that was only like a year old, and that truck was worth a lot after it got done with the winter of 58.
When
yes.
I was wondering how many people died because of the blizzard.
Well, one article here said 23,
in the state,
but not, I don't remember anybody around here.
No. I think that was the Amsterdam newspaper that had that.
Right.
Charlie, when did Jefferson get rid of their limb?
They didn't have it in 58. If they had it, they didn't run it.
Okay, they had it, because I remember it, you know, as a kid.
I do, too.
But I don't remember them ever getting rid of it. I was wondering, you know.
They sold it to
Jamba.
Mike Jamba bought it.
Yeah,
but I remember him plowing the North Road with it when I was a kid.
I can remember him plowing Lake Past here. Yeah.
Boy, that's when you had to be rugged to plow snow. Well, and I don't know if there was much heat or
that thing was fine.
It wasn't even seated.
I had two big men on the thing because they had two big wheels on the back. And I said,
right.
Yeah, it was pull the wings up.
Thank God it was mechanical. That's probably all that kept you warm.
They filled the boxes on the back right full of sand come October. And they ran them all winter with that sand full of, the box full of sand to give traction. In the spring they went and dumped it.
But everybody says, you know, we don't get winters like we used to. Well, we haven't lately, but that doesn't say that it won't come back either. I always think the weather is more a cycle than it is anything else.
You don't believe Al?
Excuse me?
You don't believe Al, sir?
No. He made a lot of money at it, so maybe I should look into it. But I don't believe it. I'll tell you, this winter is turning in, as far as heat, is turning into a winter where it's used quite a lot of heat. We haven't had the extremes, but it hasn't gone above 32 much either. Any more questions? Comments?
I know many of you
were farmers and had animals back then, and probably had a lot of your cows in the barn, but were there any that were actually out on pasture? I know ours are heritage breeds, so we actually, through some of the storms we've had here, has been quite challenging trying to get to them. I mean, you know, the snow has been, you know, up to their neck. So was that ever a challenge as far as just getting to your animals? And
back in them days, every cow was stable.
Yep. Everything, even the horses, were inside.
Inside.
And by the way, a horse is fine outside. It won't hurt a horse to be outside. But back then, they kept them in.
I just want to say that the Historical Society, there's some copies of the 2010 newsletter that we have put out and shows some of the events we had. There's going to be another Maple Museum Music Series 2011. We have five concerts lined up, and the first one will be on Sunday, May 29th, with an Upper Catskill String Quartet doing popular classical music. And then we have a men's group, saying doo-wop and barbershop. That's going to be on Friday, the 1st of July, and Friday night. And then we have a Catskill Mountain Boys Bluegrass Country coming up on July 15th on Friday night. And then we have an Irish night. We're not sure when that's going to happen. And then we're going to finish it up with a, another classical string quartet event at the end of August. And there will be some music played by Frank Matta, composed by Frank Matta, who's lived there. Moving ahead with activities, and we're always asking for people to become members, and if you want to make a contribution to the Maple Museum Restoration Fund, you're great too. And there's refreshments and coffee.
Yes.